Welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Loeb, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. From March 10th through the 24th, Dr. Derek Frisbee, Associate Professor of History, took his Public Memory and the Vietnam War class to Vietnam itself for a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to find out what life is like in the country with which the United States has a very complicated and very controversial relationship. We're going to find out more with Courtney Schaff, who was one of the students who went on that trip, and Dr. Frisbee himself, with a few more comments from yours truly, who also tagged along just to try to publicize the event. It was a history-making event for MTSU. It was a pioneering effort in study abroad opportunities, and it's going to become an institutional part of the fabric of MTSU. We'll discuss Vietnam then and now, after these words from MTSUnews.com.
Here are a few of the stories now on MTSUnews.com, the university's news and information website. MTSU alumnus Pettus Reed was presented the Outstanding Commitment to Tennessee Agriculture Award April 2nd at the state capitol. The Rockville resident and 1970 MTSU graduate is an author, editor, and Tennessee Farm Bureau Federation Director of Communications. Dr. Jim Burton, outgoing dean of the Jennings A. Jones College of Business, was presented April 2nd with a framed copy of a General Assembly resolution. The resolution honors and commends Burton for his contributions to MTSU, as well as his community service. And finally, Tullahoma native and MTSU alumnus Patrick Pratt will receive a 2013 Charles B. Rangel International Affairs Fellowship. He is the first graduate from a Tennessee university to receive the honor, which comes from the Ralph J. Bunch International Affairs Center at Howard University in Washington, D.C. For MTSU News Anytime, go to MTSUnews.com.
Derek, Courtney, thanks for coming in to talk about the trip.
All right. Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Jen. I appreciate it.
Did Dr. David Schmidt, our Associate Vice Provost for International Affairs, approach you about this, Derek, or was it your idea, or was it a joint effort?
Dr. Schmidt approached me about a year and a half ago. We had already run some very successful programs dealing with public memory and warfare during World War II in the Pacific. We had visited Iwo Jima, Guam, and Peleliu. We had run two trips to Europe following the Band of Brothers tour. And when Dr. Schmidt came on board, one of the first things he asked me was, what can we do in Asia, and particularly Vietnam, to establish a relationship with that country? And I hesitated a little bit to go to Vietnam. It was a war in which I knew many people who were involved in growing up, so I had some of their experiences transferred to me through their stories and with relatives who fought. And we had been researching, actually, MTSU students who had been killed in Vietnam. So I reluctantly investigated it to see if it was feasible. And once I investigated it and determined that it was feasible, I became more and more excited about it. And I couldn't have been more pleased with the outcome, not only from the students, but with the participation of a local alum, Bud Morris, and of course, yourself.
You wanted more MTSU alums who were Vietnam veterans to come on the trip. Bud Morris was a great addition who contributed very much to our total understanding of what it was like for soldiers over there. What do you think that MTSU Vietnam veterans could get out of this in the future if they were to come on the 2014 trip to Vietnam?
Well, I think MTSU veterans returning with MTSU students and with MTSU faculty is a unique opportunity. I think that as we've talked to our students, if you were to go back to the battlefield at Stones River 50 years after the event and walk the fields with those veterans, that would be an amazing resource that you would have to draw from in your own personal life experience, perhaps in your career as a teacher. So to have not only a friend and a mentor like Bud tag along with us, his interaction with the students, I think, was invaluable to the success of the trip. And I'm glad to see that Bud has sort of labeled it one of the greatest experiences of his life. I think the students would say the same thing about having Bud on our trip.
Courtney, what did you do before you left the country to get your head ready to be in country, in Vietnam? What did you read? What did you listen to? Mm-hmm. What did you watch in the way of videos or television programs, any of that?
Probably a better question would be, what didn't I do? I researched, of course, a little bit about it. My old roommate was, she graduated biology major here at MTSU, and she would email me almost every single week to remind me of something else that I cannot eat abroad. And I talked with my grandfather, who was a Vietnam vet, to see what kind of experiences he had at the time. I also knew somebody that was from Vietnam, and I asked him questions and what to do, what not to do, cultural issues, so that way I could be prepared for when I do arrive, because it is a completely different culture from what we had here.
Was your grandfather pretty forthcoming about his war experiences?
Yes. Well, usually he's not, because I don't know what to ask him. Usually I just say, what about the Vietnam War? And he wants more detailed questions, because he usually doesn't just spit something out. And with this trip, I was able to say, well, here's one place we're going. What do you know about this? This is another place we're going. What do you know about this? So he was able to give me more information when I was more based on.
What branch of the service was he in, and where was he stationed?
He was in the Army, and he was near Saigon, near the Kuchi Tunnels and the Black Virgin Mountain, where we were able to visit and see the base of where he was.
Have you talked to him since coming back?
Yes, I have. He is really excited that I got to go, and he loved the pictures that I sent him. I'm trying to convince him to go with me again through another tour guide, or maybe with Frisbee next year.
Derek, what kind of classwork did you have them do before they left?
Well, our students at the beginning of the semester, when they enrolled, actually when they registered for the course, they were required to get permission of the instructor to enroll. So almost upon their first inclination to enroll, we had them begin reading Stanley Carnow's Vietnam History, which is a book that I used in my own Vietnam class in graduate school, and found it to be a very sort of broad-based study, not only of the events of the Vietnam War, but really the focal point of the class was to look at the interactions of how societies organize themselves for war, how they choose to fight the war, and how they choose to remember the war. And Carnow not only experienced the war from a personal perspective, but he was influential in writing many of the journalism articles about it. Courtney participated in almost every cultural activity we could think of. She harvested rice. She loaded ice onto fishing boats. She held babies. I mean, we really got to experience not only the country, but the culture. And I think, as I often say in my history classes, events don't make history, people do. And so we got to know the people of Vietnam, and we got to know the veterans, people like Bud Morris, and we even met some NVA and Viet Cong veterans. So we were really fortunate in the experiences that we had, and I would credit that not only just to good fortune, but to the tour company that we traveled with, which added another two veteran perspectives to our trip. So Vietnam Battlefield Tours definitely gets my highest praise for the way they run their company and for the veterans they hire to lead these kinds of tours.
Which, by the way, is a 501c3 nonprofit organization that helps veterans, and by collecting money from universities and private groups, has money on hand to help veterans who can't afford to go back on their own. We'll be back with more in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The Intercultural and Diversity Affairs Center helps to promote awareness and understanding of the wide variety of cultures represented at MTSU. The center provides information, referrals, and resources. Additionally, IDAC tries to make students from different cultures feel welcome and comfortable on campus so they can have every opportunity to fulfill their academic, social, and personal potential. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking today with Dr. Derek Frisbee and Courtney Schaff, who went on a very special study abroad trip from March 10th through the 24th to Vietnam. I have not gotten one bit of blowback from people who might have thought that we were doing the wrong thing. And that was a very, very pleasant surprise to me, because, as you know, There is still a great deal of bitterness in some quarters, but the veterans with whom we traveled were very open and friendly, and they seem to be totally into finding closure after all these years.
I think that's an accurate assessment. I too believe that there might be those who would still be bitter and have every reason to be bitter. By all measures, combat in the Vietnam War, even in sort of the rear areas, the logistical areas of Vietnam, was rigorous. It was difficult. It was stressful, and in many times horrific. You can't help but to walk through the Cuchi Tunnel complexes and have one of these tour guides pop up out of the ground right next to your foot, and when you were convinced was solid ground, suddenly opens up into a 3 or 4 story tunnel complex. You know, the psychological rigors of fighting in that kind of environment are overwhelming, and you really get a sense of the fact that Americans, like the Chinese and even the French before them, were fighting the environment and the terrain as much as they were the people of Vietnam.
And we went through the Cuchi tunnels, Courtney. I know they've been widened to accommodate Westerners like me, but I was still amazed that we all made it through there. I mean, I made it through one of them. You guys went through about 3 different ones. What was that like for you?
Okay, they said they widened it for Westerners, and that's not true. They widened it for little children because those still weren't wide enough for us. The first time, I'm really claustrophobic, so I didn't want to go through, and actually Frisbee made me go through the first one, so I was okay. They were just really, really dark and scary, and then the tour guide just kind of left us, so we were like running through the tunnels. But the second one was a little bit better. The third one, I actually didn't complete the third one. Frisbee did. I don't know how you, like, what'd you do, like, seal crawl through the last?
We had to crawl through the tunnels. They got kind of narrow at the end, and I believe we had some local wildlife intrude upon the tunnels as well.
They didn't tell you about the bats,
No,
they
did not tell us about the bats. They didn't tell me about the bat until he told me to turn around and look up, which, of course, when you turn around and look up, you're really just turning around and being face-to-face with the bat.
It could be a face full of guano right on you.
Exactly. So that, and I guess when he ran off was the cue for the bat to run off to the first tunnel, so that wasn't...
And this is like an intricate series of underground rooms where the Vietnamese could stay and hide from American troops who were looking for them. That was... They had a hospital room. They had a place where the spy could fall and drop down. They had a place for cooking, and they had a particular kind of arrangement where the smoke would be trapped so that it wouldn't come up and alert the troops to where you were.
I know that, you know, myself, I mentioned earlier, you know, I had these veterans discuss their Vietnam War service with me. And you look at the movies, and it's, you know, Vietnam comes across as this dark, foreboding place where there's danger at every turn, and everyone's hostile. And from the moment you got on the ground in Vietnam, you know, you realize that modern Vietnamese, this generation of Vietnamese, have almost no recollection of the war to some degree. And we never met a rude person while we were there. We were always greeted very warmly. Even again by the NVA and VC veterans, which we met at the Vinh Moc Tunnel Complex, which was a much more civilian type tunnel complex, unlike the Cuchi, which was more military oriented. But again, this perspective that we have of Vietnam through popular culture is one that is somewhat dated and is reflective of the veteran experience, without a doubt. But modern Vietnam is definitely the complete opposite of that in many ways.
Derek, what was it like to lead the students up Hill 119, where the 1st Reconnaissance Battalion was encamped?
Yes, we were fortunate enough to have one of our tour guides, Ed Stittler, better known as Tex to the rest of us, who was in what they called Arizona Territory or the Wild West, sort of a free fire zone of enemy activity during the Vietnam War. And this was in the northern sector, what we call I Corps sector, with the Marines. And Tex led us up to one of the vantage points overlooking sort of the Arizona Territory, and this was Hill 119. So as a Marine myself, I decided that we would get sort of an experience of what a Vietnam patrol would have gone through. And we organized ourselves into a squad and then fire teams. And we used dispersion and separation to sort of stretch out along the ridgeline and climb the hill. And it was definitely more strenuous than I thought it was going to be. I tried to keep up. And as I told the students, my mind is 20, but my body tells me I'm 41. So it was a little bit rough, but everybody seemed to make it.
Except me.
Yeah. Well, it was just different because we would get to one hill, and then I'm like, oh, we're at the top. And then they would keep going up. Oh, I guess we're not at the top. Then we'd go up another little cliff, and oh, we're at the top again. Now we still have more to go. So finally we made it to the top, and it was a lot. It was higher than I expected it to be, even though I saw it from the ground. It was a lot different. Yeah. But I tumbled on the way down. So,
and several other places we went, you're still finding military items. We found part of a Claymore mine clicker. We found expended small arms ammunition,
sandbags.
In America, a Civil War battlefield is a hallowed place. It's a place for memory and reflection. And that's just not the case in Vietnam at this point. And we went into Khe Sanh, and it's a coffee plantation. And they put a few tanks and armored vehicles up there, and they've kept the runway somewhat open, not only for the historical perspective, but just for themselves to get items in there. And you realize the effect of terrain, and without helicopters, you couldn't maneuver in Vietnam.
It would have been impossible.
We saw parts of the old road, Route 9, to Khe Sanh. And I can't imagine trying to get any kind of military equipment through there. And even in the battle for Wei, there are no monuments. There's no placards that said this is where such and such happened, or this is where 5th Marines moved in. You just don't see that constant reminder of the war. Much of that has been erased. And Wei is the one place where we did strangely find a commemoration of the war. We found a brand new monument to the battle for Wei from the Vietnamese perspective, and got to meet a few veterans from the other side.
Next location. To the air tower where the airstrip used
next
to be.
Next to the Thay Nhoc Airport, yeah. And so, a lot of this stuff is just no longer visible. And there are many cemeteries. There are many Vietnamese who didn't come back. And those things are places for like civil religion is what the sort of technical term in history we call it. Places to sort of extol the virtues and values of the country and the service and of service to country, but even those are not.
They're
well
not kept up well,
and they're almost bypassed and ignored by. We never saw any Vietnamese in the cemetery.
How do you reconcile this with the fact that the winner usually wants everything remembered and wants to tell generations to come their side of the story?
When we went to My Lai, and we went to the museum. And people in our group, people from Vietnam, would hit people in our group and point to the pictures and point to them. And I witnessed them put their kid in front of statues that they had of symbolizing or showing what had happened between the soldiers and the civilians at the town. And they had their child stand in front of it and smile and take a picture. And I just felt like here in the United States, it would be completely different than what had happened. And they wouldn't be taking pictures in front of statues, and it's just completely different how they take things in. Like in the Hanoi Hilton, it's still there, but it's there as a remembrance of what the French did to them. It's not, this is where our POW camp was during the Vietnam War. It was, look what the French did to us.
We'll have more about this in just a moment. This is MTSU on the Record.
The mission of the June Anderson Center for Women and Non-Traditional Students is to provide education, advocacy, direct services, outreach, and programming for the MTSU campus and surrounding community on gender-related issues. The center also assists older students who are trying to balance work, college, and family. It also sponsors a monthly legal clinic, career brown bag series, book club, and a newsletter twice a year. For all of the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
We're talking about a study abroad trip to Vietnam with Dr. Derek Frisbee, who was the professor in the class, and Courtney Schaff, who was one of the students who went on the trip. Talking about the My Lai Massacre Museum, a lot of the students had mixed emotions about the captions underneath the photographs that seemed to be chock full of hyperbole for an event that did not require hyperbole to get the point across that it was a terrible thing. And a diorama with American soldiers depicted killing children and women and everything. Is this the way they really feel, do you think? Or do you think that this is government-sponsored hyperbole to reinforce their point of view?
Well, the My Lai massacre, which is also known as the My Son massacre to the Vietnamese, it, as you said, it needs no exaggeration, and it's horrific enough on its own. But I think of all the places we went to in Vietnam, and I think this includes the War Remnants Museum, which definitely had elements of the My Lai interpretation within it. But My Lai is, of all the places we went to, the only place we actually saw other Vietnamese visiting on in large numbers. And I think the government uses the My Lai massacre sort of as a focal point of the brutality of at least the American war. And they're obviously still very upset with the French, perhaps even more so than the Americans, for the colonization. But, you know, one thing you realize over and over again in Vietnam is that they've gone through centuries of colonial struggle, and each time they find a way to prevail. Their will to survive as a nation prevails. And in our case, in the American case, it cost us dearly in both lives and prestige. But to the Vietnamese, that's a central part of their identity. And so you can almost, and I say almost because I even got a little bit upset at the Hanoi Hilton interpretation, but you can almost understand it. Mm-hmm. When you realize that the Vietnamese still today prohibit any display of the South Vietnamese flag, there's no cemetery for South Vietnamese soldiers. There's no memorialization of them. And so, you know, as Americans, you know, we still have Confederate cemeteries. We still allow the Confederate flag to be displayed.
It wasn't all military history, as fascinating as it was. Let's talk about some of the cultural aspects, Courtney, about going on that Mekong River boat ride and experiencing the coconut candy factory. Oh, yeah. And also the bee pollen.
Oh, yes,
and
yes.
The honey.
Oh, yeah. I'm still very upset that I didn't try to get some of the bee honey or bee pollen. But as far as the coconut candy, you guys, it was very interesting because I've never been to a candy factory here in the United States, but I'm pretty sure that you can get the idea that a lot of machines do everything. And then to go here and go to Vietnam, and there are machines that work a little bit, but most of it's by hand. Right. And you see the women wrap up the candy and package it up for you to sell it right there, and you can go buy it. I did buy a lot of it, but I gave a lot of it away to the kids there. My mom's still very upset that I didn't bring any home, but it was worth it. And then the pollen, or the bee pollen and the bees, I took pictures, and I was showing one of my friends, and they pointed out they didn't wear a bee suit. They didn't use any dust. They just went in and grabbed the bee up and, like, had Frisbee. I know you touched it. I did, too. Actually touched the beehive, and we didn't get stung or anything, but that shocked me that...
I didn't mind putting the snake around my shoulders. Oh, no. I was afraid to stick my finger in the beans.
I don't know why you're afraid the snake thing.
I was the exact opposite. I'm a beekeeper myself, so the bees didn't scare me as much as the snake did. Again, you have to understand the people. And I think, you know, this is part of the mistake that America made when they became invested in Vietnam. You have to understand the people and who they are and what they do. Okay. And everyone seemed willing to sort of share, not only the students share with the Vietnamese people, but again, the Vietnamese people were always willing to share their perspectives. They were always willing to sort of let us join in whatever they were doing. We met a woman who runs a restaurant. She was a former VC operative. We met a survivor of the My Lai massacre who was more than willing to come on his day off down and talk to us and have the students, you know, make inquiries into sort of his experience, and to have to live that experience every single day of your life has got to be overcoming.
We'll take one more brief break. This is MTSU on the record.
The Tennessee Civil War National Heritage Area is managed by MTSU's Center for Historic Preservation. a partnership unit of the National Park Service, the Heritage Area tells the whole story of America's greatest challenge, offering assistance with Civil War and Reconstruction-era programs. Our projects include historic driving tours, museum exhibits, and nominations to the National Register of Historic Places. For all the latest MTSU news and information, go to mtsunews.com.
What would you do differently in 2014?
Well, we're going to be a little bit more physically active in 2014. We sort of painted a very broad brush of Vietnam. We traveled from really the Mekong all the way up to Hanoi in one way or another. And so if we go back again, I think we'll probably start in the I Corps region with Wei and Da Nang and Marble Mountain.
You'd go from north to south instead of south to north.
And we'll take some time to go through the A Sha Valley this time. And for those of you not familiar with Vietnam, you know, over towards Khe Sanh in the western part of the country, down towards the A Sha Valley. This A Sha Valley is a famous Hamburger Hill engagement. We're going to climb up some of these mountains, some of these hills, like we did with 119.
Are they taller than 119?
They will be taller than 119, especially the hills around Khe Sanh. They have infamous numbers like 361. And, so
I'll stay down there with the eucalyptus lady on the plateau.
So, we'll probably end more in the south rather than start there. And as much as I love Hanoi, and there's so many aspects to Hanoi we could talk about, I think most of what we want to study in terms of warfare and memory can be found in the I Corps region and down towards the An Khe Pass.
A little more into the country and out of the urban areas.
Out of the urban areas.
Yeah. There was a restaurant in Wei that we went to, and they had a waitress there named Lynn. And I'm actually still friends with her on Facebook, and we instant message every so often back and forth. And, of course, I don't know any of her language, but she knows English pretty well. So we'll talk back and forth, and she's actually looking forward to us going back here next year. So,
yeah, it just exceeded all my expectations. We had a really great group of students to make this inaugural journey to Vietnam. I couldn't be more pleased with the outcome, couldn't be more excited to go back. And I would encourage any member of the MTSU community, particularly MTSU veterans. The next time we go, we do have sort of plots of where MTSU students fell during the Vietnam War, and we plan to visit more of those sites and remember those MTSU students who died in the line of duty. As sort of the mission statement of this company, we can take you back to the exact place, at least as close as physically possible to the exact place where you may have served in Vietnam. And as Bud, I believe, discovered on this trip, it was a healing experience in many ways. And again, I couldn't ask for a better experience all the way around.
And if you want to find out more about the 2014 Vietnam Study Abroad possibilities, Derek Frisby's email is derek.frisby@mtsu.edu. Derek, Courtney, Chamo.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
That's thank you in Vietnamese.
MTSU On the Record, a news and information program about Middle Tennessee State University, is produced by the university's Marketing and Communications Office, which is solely responsible for its content. Read more about MTSU at our website, mtsunews.com. Podcasts of this program are available at mtsunews.com and on iTunes.